They were high school sweethearts that got married and had two kids. It's the Brunettes. From a new location, they tweet all day, but that's okay. They're the Brunettes. She is a journalist. He is a wonk.
Wonk, wonk, wonk.
They talk about the news or whatever they want. In the fight for justice, they're on your side. You can't deny it's the Brunettes.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to our low-effort, low-quality podcast. This is Liz Brunig. This is my husband, Matt.
Hello, everyone.
Matt was just disclosing to me he doesn't like coconut because it has the texture of sawdust.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that, what about like a coconut cream pie? I feel like this is a very juicy iteration of coconut, or like a Mounds bar. Like
that's the case I'm talking about.
You feel like you get to the end and it's really gritty. It's called swallowing.
I wouldn't say it, the end. I would say immediately it's gritty.
Sound off in the comments, folks.
I'm sure there are presentations of it. I'm just saying that, yes. No, Mounds, Almond Joy, all that kind of stuff.
Almond Joy is pretty good, too.
They're like these little shreds of coconut or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just gritty, and that's weird. There's nothing else that is like that.
What about when the coconut's toasted and it's crunchy?
Again, I don't know about other things. I'm just saying when I was a kid and I was introduced to it, and it was especially like in a Mounds or Almond Joy type setting, or even like cakes, right? Because they put on the cakes as well.
Yeah, they put toasted coconut on the outside of a coconut cake. That's one of the finer things in life.
Precisely, or like German chocolate cake.
Yeah,
like whatever that is,
whatever
like the thing where it's kind of like shredded into pieces, that shit's, it's not good.
I mean, I think that you have run into a lot of sweetened flaked coconut that has been untreated and unprocessed.
Look, the coconut people need to get their shit in a row.
Okay.
I'm not going to fight through it to figure out how to eat it.
It's aggressive. Okay.
So whatever the coconut industrial group is, you know, like the people who run milk ads or the people who run
Big Coconut
Avocados from Mexico ads and whatever, they need to figure out how to lead with the coconut and make it like the good stuff.
I'm a fan of coconut. Folks, sound off in the comments. Let us know if you're a coconut cuck or not. I am a big-time coconut cuck myself. You know, but what can I say? I mean, I hear your textural disagreements. And when someone has a textural complaint, it's hard to do anything about that. One of my friends told me one time she can't eat shrimp because the texture is like maybe what she imagines biting into someone's finger would be like. Like you're popping all these little veins and stuff.
I guess.
In your mouth, yeah. I mean, she has a point. I'd still eat that garbage, though. I sure will.
I mean, that's a weird thing. I wouldn't say that's a different thing, okay? You know why it's a different thing?
Why is it a wholly different thing?
Because you're not saying, this texture is unpleasant to me. You're saying, this texture, because of my demented brain.
Oh no!
It causes me to think of something.
This is one of my bitch friends. Be nice.
Completely unrelated. You know, I'm just joking. But
no, I know.
Completely unrelated thing that would be gross. Like eating a human finger would be gross. But you're not eating a human finger. In the case of coconut, I am eating something with a gritty texture. Like, that's the thing I'm, you know, it's not like this reminds me. I'm imagining that I'm eating something with a gritty
texture.
Yeah,
you're not like, this puts me in mind of sawdust. No. You're like, this basically is.
Yeah, the sawdust is just an example to kind
of,
you know,
of something
inflame
equally
people
gritty.
A little bit. But I'm not like, ooh, sawdust is gross and this reminds me of it. And I'm just like, this texture is bad.
Yeah.
And if you want to know what the texture is, let me give you an analogy.
Well, there's a reason that we're thinking of all things tropical and fruity, and it's because the warm weather has arrived, folks.
Mm-hmm.
The sun is back. It's good again.
I'm out.
The kids have already gotten sunburned, not by us, by my parents.
I ran a sunburn-free ship last year.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Which is not easy to do.
Not with two small kids.
I played a perfect game.
He did.
Your parents had them for a week, and they were burnt to shit.
Okay, well, I think they were fairly mild sunburns in the.
So I don't know what's going on with all that.
Things, but
I guess back in their day, they didn't really do sun. The sunscreen wasn't.
I'm sure it just kind of got away from them with the kids sweating and running around and getting in the water and stuff like that. You know, it is hard. You can speak
to
that.
How did I run a perfect game, though? How did I run a perfect game?
I think that you were probably really diligent, like made them get months. Out of the water so you could reapply sunscreen and stuff, which is hard to do because they'll cry.
That sunscreen runs 80 minutes. It says so right on the bottle there. It's not a mystery.
All right. Well, so, I mean, that's something that we're going to talk about later in the cast is the children. It's a warm weather kids season. I feel like I am almost someone else in the warm weather season. Relative to the cold weather seasons, you know?
It didn't used to be this way, but
yeah,
these days, certainly, once that warm weather hits and that sun hits, it's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
It's weird, because I would have told you for a long time, I don't really care about the seasons or whatever, but now, with the kids and whatever, it's a whole other... I feel completely different. New human being, let's go.
Yeah.
Shorts and t-shirt. Let's just hit it all. Let's go to the water park.
Yeah.
Let's go to the amusement park. Let's hit the beach. Let's go swimming. Let's go. There's like 45 new activities unlocked that you don't have in the winter. And there's nothing really in the winter that's unlocked except for periodically sledding or snow type sports, which I don't really do all that much of, but occasionally, I guess that's about it. It's otherwise got very little to add.
That's incredible. I mean, it's a whole new thing. When the warm season arrives, I feel like, you know, the cold season is so dense with holidays. I feel very, very intensely productive and very focused and kind of very like laser aligned on doing X, Y, and Z and being productive and stuff. And in the summer, I feel like the most fun version of myself, which is also similar to what you're describing, you say.
The feeling also, and this is especially true in the morning, and I don't know why this is, but these days I'm reminded of like doing morning football workouts.
Yeah, that's like getting the kids out the door is like a morning football workout.
Well, just even without the kids. Yeah. Just if I'm up in the morning, I mean, I'm up every morning, obviously, but at a certain temperature,
yeah,
it brings back, you know, like, the way sounds and smells and all that kind of stuff. That's where I'm always brought back, which is very weird, as I think about getting up at like 6 in the morning and going and doing, you know, like football conditioning and strength and conditioning, like training stuff.
Man, that's incredible. I'm thinking about like laying there with the sun coming through the leaves, kind of shining through my eyelids while I dream. But, you know, we're different vibes of person.
Well,
I think.
I should say I'm not thinking about doing it. Like, let me go replicate it. I feel like I'm, you know, 14 again or whatever. Yeah. You know, like it just brings me back to that moment. And I don't know why that's the moment for like summer mornings. I mean, I guess that's what I did a lot of the summer mornings, but, you know, well, not exclusively. But, well, I guess that's the whole. Yeah, you know, I mean, for me, growing up, summer didn't really mean much. I mean, it meant no school, but there was no, I had zero programming at all for all my summers from age like 7 on, you know, and before then the programming was daycare. But after that, no programming except for occasionally, you know, if there was like a football thing, you know, strength and conditioning, I would get myself up and wander over on my own to do that.
It takes you back. It takes you way back. Summer mornings, I can remember when I used to driving myself to Whataburger for those honey butter chicken biscuit things.
Mm-hmm.
Those are pretty good. That's a summer morning memory. And also, both my parents would be gone to work, and so I could just drive myself home and then go swimming in our pool, which I did a lot.
Yeah. Now you,
it was nice.
You had a much, you know... You had many more options.
I had many more options. I was lucky. I had many fortunate aspects to my childhood and some that I would have traded, frankly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But who among us?
You know, you win some and you lose some.
That's life. And
you can't bat 1,000, I always say.
Nobody does it.
Except for me last
except
summer.
Except for you with the perfect sunscreen game.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You did bat 1,000 on that one. Mm-hmm. I was impressed because Claire is very fair. You know, she sunburns quite easily.
Mm-mm. I've got it under control.
So in terms of news this week, there's fairly little in the news. At this point, it's all basically Republican primary news, which translates into news about Trump and the indictment and DeSantis.
And lesser
yeah, and lesser competitors. Yeah,
yeah. No, that's where we're going to be on
Nikki
news.
Haley. Yeah,
I think for it's just going to be Republican primary because we have divided government. And so it's going to be scandals and Republican primary, and obviously the overlap between the two, which will probably be extensive.
if we have any luck at all,
that's what we're in store for.
It will continue to be
the next
clown show.
What I mean,
gosh.
Well, November is going to be the election, right? So that's 19 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know.
If
it
we
is
had
gonna
a
be
baby
depressing.
Right now. We would be watching that thing walk around and eat solid food by the time this all ends.
Yeah.
That's the reality of it.
It's gonna be hard to gin up content for the cast. No, we'll fly. But
no,
you
we're
know.
Gonna become an arts and entertainment cast, and we're gonna get into reviewing films. I've seen some films. I saw a film in theaters. I saw 65.
The fuck's that?
It's about a guy who's on a spaceship and it crash lands on Earth 65 million years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got to kill dinosaurs with grenades and a laser gun.
Okay.
And he has to also get off planet Earth before the, catastrophic asteroid collision in the Yucatan that killed the dinosaurs. Because that's also happening, unrelatedly.
Okay, that's it's interesting, bad timing. I guess. It's just an action movie.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it has its place.
Yeah. My friend and I went and saw it. What can I say? We never spoke of it again after we saw it. we recognized at some point that it was a total capsule experience, that we just went and saw this movie and never discussed it and went on discussing other things.
Mm-hmm.
But we both agreed it was pretty boss. He did kill a lot of dinosaurs.
Great. No,
so
that's wonderful.
That. If you want to see that.
In terms of art, for me, I guess I was thinking about Outlast.
Yeah.
The new Netflix series that's sort of like a combination of Alone. Alone is still the best survivalist series ever. And
yeah.
There's like, 10, 15 different competitors out there, but Alone is definitely number one. All self-recorded, all based on tapping out or being medically disqualified. And you know, it seems like legit, like fully legit. No competitions, no games, no team aspects of it. Just watch this man or lady try to survive and try to avoid mental collapse from total solitude. This tries to combine that, but with teams, and they really try to play up the idea that, like, you know, what's weird is we have all these lone wolf survivalists, but we're putting them on teams, so that's going to create a lot of tension.
Okay.
It didn't. I mean, a little bit of tension here and there, but not really. I would say the main interesting novelty, which only came out about halfway through the series, was that there was no rules regarding your ability to sabotage other teams.
Yeah.
And it was an example of what I used to call the grab what you can world.
Yeah.
Where I guess there was technically rules, but it was weird because they didn't spell them out in the show. But based on the way they behaved, it was fairly clear that you couldn't put your hands on another contestant.
Yeah.
Which is funny. And that's part of the grab what you can world situation, right? Which is you can't touch someone else, right? Because that's a violation of their personal property and autonomy and whatever. But by the same token, no one can prevent you from touching anything that you want to touch. That's not a human being, right? And that was so we had an example of that here. And it was very weird at times, but people would go and like steal shit from one another and tear shit up that the other team had. Like one of them had a raft made out of inner tubes, and he just popped all those and stuff like that. Which, I mean, that is a crazy dynamic for a show, and it did unleash some interesting game playing dynamics that you've not seen in any of the other Survivor based shows.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the show was a little bit too fake, you know, for my tastes. I know, like, they're all fake to varying degrees, except for Alone, which I don't think is fake at all, frankly.
Yeah.
But this one, you know, it was a little bit too obviously scripted at times, and that was too much for me.
It did seem to have some gimmicky aspects. It was very uncomfortable to watch for me.
It was uncomfortable.
Seeing people do really uncomfortable stuff to each other, you know, it's really, really weird.
It was funny. I mean, I would say the most interesting dynamic was you basically had one of the players. It was really one of them. Mm-hmm. Maybe there were multiples. I guess there were two that they tried to play up as kind of these players, but this lady, she was the most like malicious player.
Yeah,
she was the one that wanted to go steal things and whatever, right? And like really, yeah, make things hard on people through these kind of sabotage activities, whereas a lot of them were just kind of like, hey, I just want to leave people alone and we'll just survive and see who can survive the, yeah, best, you know. But I guess the most interesting sort of human insight was watching her. Despite being an insanely malicious actor, and despite her victims really, for the most part, having done nothing at all, yeah, not even interacted with her, because you're like going to raid some other team's camp that you've never even really met any of the people there, she would nevertheless construct these elaborate stories about how like psychotic and awful these people that she was doing this to were.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting insight, I guess, into the human, you know, way of justifying, right? Like she didn't, occasionally she would justify by just being like, look, this is a game. I'm trying to win money for my family and whatever. But she also felt a need to further justify by saying those people I'm doing this to, they're actually bad people. Even though, yeah, they weren't, she had no reason to believe, yeah, that they were.
That was dark to watch. It was really dark. Difficult to see someone do it in real time. Like, you know, people do this in the world when they decide to terrorize someone, they tell themselves that they have a good reason and that it's justified.
Yeah, and they have, and it's always hard to disentangle. Like, yeah, maybe it really is, or maybe that person did do something, but is that really what you're upset,
right,
about?
Or is this a post hoc rationalization, yeah, for something you'd already decided you
or
were
going to
do?
Or maybe you're making something up, but you are, it's a genuine mistake, or I don't really know. Maybe you really think
it's so insidious, you know? And it's such a key part of doing evil is this process of justification to yourself of what you've already decided you're going to do. And it has to do with telling yourself that there's something about the other person that makes their dignity less, or their rights null or something.
Yeah, and I mean, I can't, like you were saying, it came across in the purest way on this show, because there literally was, yeah, no other way you could be like, oh, I think she just made a mistake and thought that Javier was a you know, this like soft-spoken dude who did nothing to anybody, that he probably was just a real shithead.
Yeah.
You know, that, oh, there was some misunderstanding where someone told her something. It's like, no.
Yeah.
No, like, pure fiction of her own mind. But hey, that's, I guess that makes for good TV, and it makes for good, yeah, like, like you said, immediately you're starting to apply to other things people do, especially on social media and whatever, where you're like, okay,
yeah,
they're all just doing a version of what this lady's doing, which,
yeah,
for one reason or another, they've already decided they want to go after someone or something, whether for their own gain or to try to win a game or social clout or whatever. And then it all is just downstream of that, whatever crazy shit they come up with.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Or, I mean, it also links back into the ongoing discussion we've had about moral exceptionism.
That's true. Yeah. She needs to feel aggrieved.
It's certainly an example of that, right? This is someone putting herself in a state of moral exceptionism based on some fake grievance that she's attributing to this other group. Which, you know, again, to me emphasizes why inculcating a genuine tendency towards forgiveness is maybe a good idea.
Agreed.
You know, many,
agreed.
Many such cases.
Many have said. Anyways.
Clarence Thomas, the Supreme Court justice, has been found to have been taking luxury vacations with a major Republican donor who says is a longtime family friend.
Yes.
This has caused some uproar, although to my knowledge, there's really nothing anyone can do about it.
Yeah, I mean, the procedural mechanism would be impeachment. But other than that, I don't know if there's like a law enforcement aspect to it. They are supposed to disclose these kinds of things.
Yes.
And you can go through some of the disclosures that, you know, some of the other people have done, including Thomas himself. And they disclosing things that are of far less significance than this, you know. So this, I think, clearly would cross the bar. But
yeah.
He did not disclose this. Now, I'll say that that was what was the big splashy thing that a lot of people, you know, that was the big story coming out, I think, ProPublica. Yeah, it was ProPublica. But I would say a far more interesting story came out later, which is that Harlan Crowe purchased some real estate from Thomas, his mother, and the family of Thomas's late brother. They were like the co-owners of these parcels of land.
Okay.
And Harlan Crowe purchased it from them for $133,000. And, you know, that's a common way to launder money.
Yeah.
To people. You see this quite frequently in politics, and I'm sure in other contexts as well. But it's like, well, I can't give you money, but I am allowed to buy things from you. So why don't I overpay for some piece of land that you own? And then no one can really say much of anything, you know, unless they look real close. But
yeah.
This purchase was especially weird. This is from ProPublica. It says that the purchase put Harlan Crowe in an unusual position. He now owned the house where Justice Thomas's elderly mother was living. Soon after the sale was completed, contractors began work on tens of thousands of dollars of improvements on the two-bedroom, one-bathroom home, which looks out onto a patch of orange trees. The renovations included a carport, a repaired roof, and a new fence and gates, according to city permits and blueprints. So, you know, federal law requires judges and other officials to disclose details of most real estate sales over $1,000. Thomas did not disclose this sale. So it's not only that he weirdly bought the home and land that Clarence Thomas's mother like lived in, but she continued to live in it. And then he also seemingly like spruced it up a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know,
Interesting. The Crow family from our neck of the woods.
Yeah, this is Dallas. I'd never heard of this
royalty.
Person. But yeah, I'm sure he's, you know, out there in Highland Park or whatever.
I believe part of the SMU campus is named after his wife.
Yeah.
If I recall
his
correctly.
His wife is on the board of, I think, I don't know, one of the right-wing think tanks. So it was, I think it was Cato maybe.
Perfect.
But it's a weird, and then when this all came out, I don't know if you saw this, but all of these like weird, not weird, but the sort of conservative pundits, they all started going to bat for him. And then it gradually realized, oh, this guy is like, he's kind of just all over the place.
Yeah.
Like he has dinner with, you know, I don't know, every right wing, you know, the baseball crank and, you know, like he's just really, and they're all just doing this. And who knows how much money, you know, he's spreading out. It reminds me of the Rod Dreher thing where we eventually learned that his whole American conservative blog was being funded by one random dude.
Yeah.
Who was paying him six figs to put out that stuff. So, you know, another link of the chain revealed.
Harlan Crowe. Well, none of this could have happened to a set of nicer guys. wonder if anything will come of it.
Because you wonder, you know, what's going on with, like, what's, why is he giving all this money to Thomas?
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, it's just an ideological thing. Are they just friends? You know what I mean? Like, it's true that, like, he doesn't have any specific business before the court. You know what I mean? But he's obviously a right-wing ideologue. So is he thinking, like, this will help keep Thomas in line, you know? Is he that calculated about it? Or is it just like, dude, I have so much money and it's just cool to, like, I feel, it makes me feel important to be helping out a Supreme Court judge or something. Yeah, I don't know. What do you have any insight into the psychology of something like this?
I mean, you know, when you give people large amounts of money, it creates a sense of you being in their debt. I mean, to people with normal psychology, I suppose.
But what does he want in return? Just to hang out with Thomas? Or he's not probably going to get any ruling specifically on something that's relevant to him.
And it's not like Thomas would decide in a way that would trouble Harlan Crow anyway.
It seems unlikely that
right? So,
yeah.
I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, it's possible that this is just how among the super rich friendships are, conducted.
Mm-hmm.
And affection is shown.
Or maybe this also helps him kind of connect to other people he does want to connect with.
Yeah,
other right-wingers, you know, it's like, oh, just kind of throw their money around and, you know, then I can meet anyone in the conservative movement, you know, and like whatever it might be at any given time, who knows, you know.
Yeah.
And that's important for me both because I'm like social and this is fun for me. Like, these are kind of like normal people who want to hang out with, you know, the quarterback of their team. This is kind of that. But also, you know, it could help me, you know, in some other way financially, like a networking kind of thing, just sort of to be all plugged in like this, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Good a guess as I've ever heard.
I don't know. But yeah, you're right. It's funny that there's no feeling at all that anything will come of this, even though it seems to be quite obviously illegal. At minimum, illegal that there's no disclosure.
Yeah.
You know, that's a like ticky-tacky thing. But
yeah, it just immediately struck me that nothing is going to come of this.
But that's our system, you know.
God bless America. Well, speaking of actual displays of patriotism, which I'll at some point probably exhibit this summer by throwing a party or having a barbecue or whatever,
mm-hmm.
Matt, a true Texan, just doesn't really frankly believe in spring because we just didn't have it. Like right after it stopped being winter in Texas, it got hot. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Like there was no gentle glide from the cold season into the warm season with like days where you just need a light hoodie.
Yeah. Or at least that happened early. I mean, it struck me that when we moved up here, spring break is in April. Mm-hmm. In my mind, it's emblazoned as a March activity.
Yeah.
And I think that is how it is in Texas, right? It's a March thing. But so maybe it is a little bit cooler. I don't know. But no, it gets going real quick. And I guess the main thing that I judge the real summer by is going to be swimming.
Yeah.
And that is possible in Texas right now, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it's not going to be possible up here for a while.
Yeah.
So it might be a little chilly in Texas for swimming. But you know, it's a lot closer than it is.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah, they're having some hot days on occasion already, especially when you look at different parts of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big state. Absolutely. I think I am already getting excited for the summer holidays. It has put me in mind of all of the stuff we're going to do with kids. Both our kids have summer birthday parties,
mm-hmm.
for example.
They like to fight about that.
Yeah, they love fighting about that.
Who's this first? Is theirs actually summer? I guess technically Jane's is not in the summer.
It's in late spring, I suppose.
I said that once and I regretted it.
Yeah.
Immediately. Because I was like, oh, you know, actually, you know, Actually, it seems like it because you think, oh, summer, June, July, August. But actually, yeah. It's summer is in the that second part of June, and you're and. I know.
No,
it was, that was a huge mistake.
Big mistake.
I really suffered the consequences from that.
Yeah.
It's very important to have a summer birthday. So.
Yeah. She has a summer birthday. That is, that's part of her identity at this point. When your birthday is and what you do about your birthday is a big thing in the formation of a first grader's identity.
Yeah. In the child community, they're really... You know, you get a sense, I got a sense before all this that, you know, there was competition between parents on this kind of thing. You know, at least where we're at and all this kind of stuff, I don't really feel that at all.
No, I don't feel that.
But there does seem to be a little bit of the kids looking around and being like, wait, where did you have your party? Where did you have your party?
Yeah.
Now, I must admit, I was unaware that people had parties at places other than their house. Or a park or something. That's a new thing to me, but that's apparently pretty common. I guess it makes sense. It saves you quite a lot of work and clean up and all that kind of stuff. But
and this brings us to the B block, by the way, which is the big kids app.
Okay, yeah.
We're all about the kids, the second part of the app.
But there's a lot of like, well... Yeah. You know, Johnny had his at the soccer complex, and Sally had hers at the trampoline park, and so I got to come up with something, you know, really big, really important.
Yeah, okay. And it's like, take it easy, man.
Chill out. Yeah. But that's a real anxiety, and not a huge anxiety, but that's like a real calculation that she's making.
Yeah, she's absolutely comparing herself to her peers based on birthday parties she has been invited to and the one that she will now throw.
And she's kind of, but she's also kind of, she's not just like, well, I want to do the best thing that other people did.
Yeah, no.
She's thinking like, I got to do something unique. I got to blow it out the water.
Yeah.
That's been done. That's tired. Trampoline park. Nah, I've been to three of them at the trampoline park.
Yeah, she's thinking about it. I know.
I think I could convince her on the swimming pool. She kind of goes back and forth on that, which is weird because I'm like, you really, this is the one. This is the one because this is not, no one else is probably going to do swimming pool. And so like, especially given, you know, the time of the year and whatever. So yeah. I promise you. Double down on this, and you'll have the most unique party of the people in your class. But she's sort of back and forth on whether that's true or whether it would be too boring.
Yeah, well, I don't think it would be boring. I just don't know that all the kids in her class can swim.
I think they can, and if not, they certainly can use the swimmies, you know?
Yeah, if we have those ready and available.
Well, they can bring their own swimmies, right?
Well,
you don't think these kids are engaging in any water activities for the summer?
I mean, I think you just have to be cognizant and you want everyone to feel included. That's part of being a good host, is making sure that everybody can participate in everything you have.
Yeah.
You know, that's just one thought.
There's other stuff you can
do. What about the splash pad?
What about it?
Could she not have a party that's related to the splash pad? You know, because then you get to play in the water and stuff, but you're not being submerged. Okay. Well, she said she wants it to be donut themed, which I think is very cute.
Well, that works well because you can get some donut inner tubes.
Exactly. You can get donut inner tubes, and also I can just order donuts and have in place of a cake.
The Dunkin'.
And then I'm not at a pool.
Make a little tower.
Trying to serve a cake. I can just hand kids a donut and a napkin. There you go.
That's true. That probably would be better.
You know, what can I say? They also do donut ice cream sandwiches these days.
They got it all, man.
They got it all. Dude, this was just nothing like this when I was a kid, having birthday parties. Nothing at all.
I never went to any or had any.
Well, Jane has an allowance.
True,
which
yes.
Is, has a like a charter and is set up in a very, I feel... structured fashion.
Absolutely, yeah. Decided to go with the allowance situation primarily, honestly, as a way to see if it can affect behavior.
Yeah, we don't spank. We're not a corporal punishment household in any sense. But the kid, folks, the behavior's bad. And it, so, you
it's
know.
It's actually, I feel like improved a lot.
I feel
in the
like
last
it is. It's markedly
weeks.
Improving. But the kids, but, you know, but you end up trying anything, you know, to modify the behavior.
Yeah, you know, you have timeouts.
And so
stuff
you're like
that,
look, I will literally pay you to be decent.
Well, you know, the trick is the reverse, right? Is
yeah.
You set it up as, okay, here's the amount you're going to get. But here are some rules that if you break them, that you'll lose money.
Yeah.
Or here's some
it's really a universal baby income, but then she can have her wages garnished.
People are psychologically much more loss averse than they are motivated by.
So fucked up to have your allowance administered by the tax man of Norway, Matt Brunig.
Motivated by gain, right? So if you say to someone, hey, if you do X, I'll give you a dollar.
The most diabolically clever economic thinker.
If you do X, I'll give you a dollar. Okay. Then there's a certain motivation they have to do X. But if you say to them, if you don't do X, I'm going to take a dollar from you. Then there's also a certain motivation. But that second motivation is much stronger than the first one.
It's going to ramify through her whole childhood, her whole adulthood.
Even though they are essentially equivalent, right? They're just two sides of the same coin. It's, you know, you're essentially being incentivized by $1 to do something. But the idea of loss is, it just looms much. And this actually causes a lot of quote unquote irrational behavior in, you know, the way people, you know, engage in the economy and make investments and stuff like that, is they're much more worried about, you know, the risk of losing a thing than they are about the possibility of gain. And so anyways, that's the basic idea. So I'll start her off with like $10 and then lose a dollar every time you break one of these rules or you don't do something, you know? And most of the rules are just like stuff she's already doing, but
yeah,
with the caveat, you can't cry when you do it. I'm trying to extinguish the crying.
By which he really means sort of a whiny narration of like, why?
Yeah, no, she knows what I mean.
Yeah.
Any kind of cry, whine, baby noise, all that kind of stuff. So like, you got to brush your teeth without crying.
You can't cry about it.
You got to pick up your toys without crying. You got to dress without crying. It's like, this is like the list of things that people, you know, check off for disabilities they have.
Yeah.
Right? Is that I can't dress myself. I can't bathe myself.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, pick up after myself. Like, these are all, I'm like, just act non-disabled.
Okay.
And you'll be good
it's
to
very
go.
Very extreme.
But, you know, so far it's been all right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think it's been working pretty well. She talks to me about her allowance and yeah,
it's on her mind. She knows to the dollar how much money she has in her account, which is interesting because she has no way to check the account.
Yeah, but she knows.
Yeah, but she knows. Like, it's, you know, she has like a little child debit account or whatever instead of cash, but she knows exact. She's like, I have $17 in my account. And like, I don't know. When's the last time anyone told her that? But
yeah.
She's got it. She knows exactly what's in there. So
she's a pretty smart little customer.
But.
She likes to have conversations with me before bed, where she talks about all of her plans and things. And she tends towards anxiety, kind of like me, which I think keeps her from falling asleep. So I've tried to teach her some of my anxiety management tools.
Now, I have never, when I was growing up, I did not have an allowance. Did you have an allowance?
No.
No, okay. So there you go. Yeah. I do think that's, I mean, I didn't have an allowance because my parents didn't have any money. You didn't have an allowance because your parents just decided that was not a good institution.
Your job is school. They would pay you for grades. My parents would pay you for grades.
I noticed, and I don't know how much this was intentional or whatever, but it seemed like they really liked to have a heavier hand. Like, to me, what I like about an allowance, aside from the ability to control behavior, is eventually getting kids to the point where, like, they manage their money and they think about how much stuff costs
yeah,
and stuff like that. And it seems like But then part of the, I guess, the downside, though I don't view it as a downside, but it seems like your parents might, is like, you don't, I mean, you can't say, hey, you can't spend your money on that, but you're really trying to be like, well, hey, I guess your money, so I guess you spend on whatever you want. And I feel like your parents really have been very reluctant to give up on that.
Yeah, my parents, they, you know, well into my late, I think, teens and so forth, they really didn't want to lose control. Like, you know, they were maybe parents who had more difficulty than most with the fact of the child, you know, growing up and becoming an adult and going on their way. And who knows how we'll cope with that. But I mean, I think it's good to be proactively ready for it. You know, as you say, to be trying to build the child up to have, you know, a good foundation to be prepared for the time when the parent is no longer making those choices.
Absolutely. I mean, real life does not work in a way where every time you want something, you ask someone and then they say yes or no, right? In real life, you have a certain amount of money and you have to decide among various options how to spend it and whatever. And so if that's the system we have, it does seem to be some value in getting them to internalize those trade-offs and that understanding early on, as opposed to, you know, I don't know, just dumping it on them. You know, like, it seems like that is something for you kind of have to train on a little bit, even though it's obvious abstractly that that's how it has to go. It seems like just getting them in the groove of that, to my mind, serves some kind of value. But at the same time, I never had, I didn't have an allowance, but I did make money. Like, I did make money mowing lawns, and I made money working at the Texas Rangers Stadium and that kind of stuff. So I did, you know, but I never spent any of it.
Yeah.
It would just accumulate. And no, people would seem to be like, oh, Matt got a job at the Rangers Stadium. Like, what are you saving up to buy? Right? Because that's always the question you ask the teens, I guess.
Yeah. What do you even buy a car or what?
Like, oh, I want a laptop. I want a whatever. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm just, you know, just putting some money away.
It's good to have some money.
In case I need it for some, I don't know. But I didn't know. I didn't spend it on anything.
Are you going to, you know, when it comes time for our kids to drive, are you going to make our kids work for the money to buy their cars from a cop auction? As you bought your own first car in cash?
Well, you know, I don't think so. I mean, I think the cars are, I don't know. You know, my car was like $1,700. I don't know that you can get a car for $1,700 now.
Yeah.
Because, like, the used cars are pretty expensive, too.
And yeah.
These cars are much more resilient than they used to be. I mean, I suppose any car at the end of life could be worth that little, right? Because at some point, there's only so much time left on them.
Yeah.
But, you know, it seemed like you could get cheaper used cars back then that still had many years left on them. But
so Jane, this weekend, if the weather holds and so forth, you have planned to go on a camping trip.
That's right.
With Jane, because she is also, along with being newly budget conscious, very outdoorsy.
Well, you know, she's always been outdoorsy, I guess, in some sense, but in the narrow sense of outdoorsy, meaning like woods and hiking and all that kind of stuff, that is somewhat new. But not, you know, when she was like 2 or 3, remember, we would walk through Rock Creek all the time. And
yeah.
She loved that. She'd tuck sand in it and throw rocks in it and stuff. She liked that a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, she's really gotten it into her head that we need to go camping. That's why I went camping last weekend or 2 weekends ago or whatever, mm-hmm. when we talked about it on the podcast. I did that in anticipation of Jane, because Jane's just like, we got to go. So we are going to go up into the local Harriman State Park here and go down the Appalachian Trail for a couple miles and set up on top of like a ridge peak, like a campsite area. And we'll see how it goes. I'm very interested to see. you know, what her sense is of it. Because she's gone on hikes before, in fact, hikes that are longer than the one we're actually going to do, because we're not, the point is not really to hike, the point's to camp. And she's camped in the backyard, but she's, we've not put together a hike followed by a camp in a real, you know, I guess you would call it wilderness-ish area, you know. But I tried to give her the best experience possible, thinking about ways to entertain her. You know, cards. I was going to show her card games. She wants to do some marshmallows. I have to be careful about where we cook those, make sure we follow the rules and stuff. And stories and all that. And I'm hoping she's impressed by the view, because it's an incredible view up on that like little peak. You could see across to Manhattan and all the lit up, you know, skyline and all that stuff. So we'll see. We'll see. She's also, it's funny, this reminds me of you actually to some extent, but she's interested in the activity itself, but she's also separately equally interested in the kit.
Yeah. The stuff.
She's like, we got to get this, we got to get that. And I'm like, I don't really need all that, you know, like kind of just put your sleeping bag and sleeping pad in and we're good to go. And she's like, nope, I need a backpack. I need some trekking poles.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess she saw on TV, or I think Bluey maybe had some trekking poles, like the dad. And
yeah.
I don't know. I've never used trekking poles. Not against them, but I did actually go get her some child trekking poles, because I'm like, well.
That's so cute.
If that's her game and she wants to be, you know, like at least.
She's like little camping Barbie.
Yeah, at least. Hey,
which I love.
I'd rather have her in good spirits as we leave, instead of like kind of pissed and then trying to play from behind, you know, and get her perked up again. So I figure, you know, $50 is worth that. But we'll see.
I think
how
you guys
goes.
Are gonna have a great time. Camping with your dad is such a foundational good memory for a kid to have.
I think it'll be good. And I mean, it's nice that where we are is right, you know. We can drive to the Appalachian Trail and like do like a real kind of ish, you know, thing, not like KOA or like car camping or whatever, which is fine as well. I mean, but it just seems like this will be far more interesting than those kind of like family campground type experiences where you sort of park and like set up a tent right by your car. And then I guess the main draw is that you kind of all get to sit around a fire and stuff. Here's like, no, we're going to actually go into, you know, a real trail, a real national scenic trail, and up on a real hill. And, you know, you're going to have a great view and, you know, it'll be great.
Claire is probably a little bit too little.
I'm not bringing this. Claire. You know, I mean, we'll see how this goes. I kind of think I could probably do Claire as well, and certainly probably could do just me and Claire. But, you know, I don't know.
It's a long walk for her.
Well, I legit just carry her, you know, but, you know,
but Claire is not even upset that you and Jane.
No, she thinks she's winning. She thinks she has the winning hand here, which is a one-on-one night with Mama.
Yeah. Yes.
She's like bragging to Jane. She's like, you got to do that. And I get to do a whole night, just me and Mama.
Yeah.
So.
She's very excited. We're going to make cookies and we're going to make our own dinner. She's going to make spaghetti and meatballs with me. And then I told her that I agreed to her that I would have dinner with her at her tiny little table in the den, at her Lego table.
Yeah.
And that I would play fancy restaurant with her where I'm the waitress and I have to serve her dinner.
Yeah, her and Jane love to set up their little Lego table in the middle of the den. You know, it's generally sitting in the corner of the den. They move it to the middle of the den. Jane will write menus. She'll fold. She'll like construct a menu with construction paper with stuff that she's ordering and stuff. And then, go from there. It's very cute and very funny.
I am the waitress. I come and take their orders, and then I'm also the chef.
Yeah, it's always chef. Yeah. Claire always refers to you as chef.
Chef.
And
yeah.
chef, like in the TV shows where...
Yeah, like, yes, chef.
Yes, chef. Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't know if she's seen these shows or whatever, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, no. And she also likes to serve and cook fake, you know, the fake food or whatever.
Yeah, Claire will go into her kitchen, her pretend kitchen, and make you food and bring it to you. But I told her I would play fancy restaurant with her after we cooked our food together, so... She'll get to order her spaghetti, and I'll bring it out to her. And then I guess we'll probably watch Bluey and have spaghetti together. but we have lots of puzzles to do. I told her I'd walk with her to the store and let her pick out some crafts to do. Hello, Mr. White.
Yeah, Kat has come to our podcast dungeon. I wonder if she will attempt to, and if she attempts to, whether she will succeed in sleeping with you.
So we have talked about whether she wants to sleep in the big bed. She said she wants me to actually sleep with her in Jane's bed.
Okay. All right. That's weird.
She's like...
I mean, it's not weird, but, you know, that's going to be a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't
know. I have slept with Jane in that bed before when she was sick. I don't know how I managed to do it, but I did.
I told her I would see. I think I'm going to try to put her to bed with me in the big bed. I'm just going to see how late she can stay up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, you know, if you run them long enough, as we learned yesterday,
they'll sleep anywhere.
They'll just go.
Yeah. You know? Like, we took them to a party last night.
Bedtime is, you know, is always a bit of a struggle, though. Lately, I'd say in the last month, it's been pretty nice.
It's been pretty good.
Like, you sit. I always put them in their beds after teeth brushing, and I sit outside the room and to make sure when they pop out that I can push them back in, like a little whack-a-mole game.
I am often there, but I don't make matters better somehow.
But
they're like, I want to see Mama, I want to see Mama, but then I go in there and it just drags out bedtime another 20 minutes.
No, you can't ever accede to any of their demands because they're all just meant to... run clock and delay.
Okay,
you know, just delay how long it is to go to bed.
It is very hard for me to listen to a child cry for me.
Well, I just you don't have to listen. You go in, you say, "Hey, you know, it's bedtime. We'll do it tomorrow, whatever." Mm-hmm. But lately, they've been good at just not coming out. But more than anything, I would say the process of running them until 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah,
if you want easy bedtime.
Yeah. Woo!
You just place them in the bed and you're done.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about anything.
They're little curled up in little shapes making little Z's by
the
time you
close
the door.
Yeah, you just put a sleeping, you know, creature into a bed.
We went to a dinner party last night and everybody there had brought their kids. And it's pretty incredible because if you're going to do a dinner party with a bunch of people and you've got kids, there are two ways this can go down. Either nobody brings any kids at all or everybody brings their kids. And those are the two ways it can work out. But if you're the only one with kids there, it's going to be hell and you're going to have a bad fucking time.
Yeah, well, and it helps if you have at least one kid of an older age who's willing to manage some of
the... Oh, that's if you're really on easy street. If you got a childminder kid who's like 14, 13, whatever.
Then you have a babysitter, basically. Yeah. But... No, I've definitely realized this, and I mean, I've sort of come to realize that's a big part of all the stuff I do with them on the weekends and stuff with like the child entertainment is obviously just, it's actually easier if there's a bunch of kids around.
If you put them with other kids.
Yeah, like you'd think, oh, I don't know, more kids, more trouble, but weirdly enough, at a certain level, you have enough kids around that it all just kind of takes care of itself.
Yeah, they all run off and play together, and they come check with you periodically, but they really kind of want to be with their peers.
Yeah, whereas if there were no other, if it was just our two kids there, it would have been a constant thing. There would have been no...
They would have wanted entertainment, and they would have expected it from us. So. But since everybody brought their kids, the kids all joined together in just a herd of children. And provided entertainment for one another.
Yeah, it's a good deal if you can manage it.
If everybody brings their kids, it's like nobody brought their kids.
This is, you know, I always think about those like culty, like, you know, communal living type things. Usually those are like, or I would say what, a good fraction of the time they love to have like eight kids and all this kind of stuff. And it, you know, in a weird, it kind of looks like it would be... on its face, you're like, damn, that's a lot of kids. It's like 80 people living there, and yeah. they each have four. But then once you've experienced this, you're like, ah, dude, I bet that's pretty easy.
I bet it's chill, dude.
I bet that's super chill. Like, we were watching that that Waco thing.
Yeah.
I think we talked about the last podcast, but one of the children, you know, who got out and whatever, she was being interviewed. She's like, it's like having, I was like, I had 40 moms. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. No, I see.
Yeah.
This is genius. In a way, this is genius because the mass number of kids means that they're all just like spinning themselves up and entertaining each other. And two, to the extent that they're, you know, the parents do need to be involved, there's so much redundancy
yeah.
that it's like, if you're not having a good one, like, you're fine. Like, you yeah. know, like, you need to contribute, no doubt, but like, there's so many other people around here who are also parents that,
yeah.
and you guys have managed to make this like a tight knit enough thing that you're just like, I bet it like on a per child basis is like 90% easier
yeah
than what, you know, sort of like the nuclear family type of, like,
it's
whatever.
True,
like,
it's so. True those big situations, it's like, you, when things open up and the big groups start to knit together, you're like, damn, I bet that would be chill. Not that we endorse the Branch Davidians.
No, I'm just talking, you know, about the
but the social setups.
And they're not the only ones. There's that one in New Zealand that
Gloria Vale,
I saw,
but I think they're also canceled.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, but, you know, what are you going to do?
What this is the response to any cancellation at this point is, yeah, yeah, what are you going to do, though, you know?
You know, I'm just, you know, we can talk about them.
Just a yeoman content creator here.
Talk about them qua the child arrangements, you know, and
speaking
we can
of,
ignore.
Of virtue and cancellation, our children have a stealing bent.
Jane has been on a rush to steal things, for sure. Claire, I mean, I guess technically Claire has stolen things, but I don't think she fully appreciates it. Jane knows what she's doing.
On three separate days, Claire put on three separate tutus from her school under her clothes and walked out of the school with them.
Jane has smuggled, yeah, Claire has smuggled tutus from the school. Those did get brought back. She brings things home occasionally, even now, like 2 days ago. And I don't really get it. I mean, she says the teacher gave it to her and said she could take it. And that seems like that can't be true. But she walks out of the classroom with them in her hands, very conspicuous. I'll even say something to her like, oh, what's that? And they don't ever bat an eye. So I don't know. I mean, I could explicitly ask them, but I try to make it apparent. Like, oh,
when
she
comes home, what's that? I just try to put it in her backpack. And I'm like, they'll see it. If they want it back, it's theirs.
Yeah.
But Jane is more, she's more aware of the vice of stealing and the fact that it's prohibited.
Jane has impulse control problems. Understandable. I mean, I don't know if they're problems because it's maybe
she's
perhaps typical.
Child, yeah.
But no, she's, that the temptation, you can see her fight it too sometimes. And then eventually like, just relents. But treats and that kind of thing are a big, big part. So if you're in the grocery store,
yeah,
you know, if you turn your back on her, she's keen to try to grab a package of Oreos or something and stuff it somewhere where, you know, specifically stuff it on her sister because that's her idea of like how it can be hidden while still getting out the door or whatever. Because she knows if she just throws it in the cart, I'll see it at the checkout. So she's pieced together that the only way to do this is to try to stuff it onto my sister.
Yeah.
And she's done that. When she did that last time, I took the thing I'd gotten her out of the cart and, you know, you had to listen. I mean, there was just wailing. She just wailed. I mean, we went directly to the checkout from there, but she just crying and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, what else can you do? You got to communicate to her. You can't be grabbing this stuff, you know.
But yeah.
They love to steal.
But
she
doesn't plan a life of crime.
She doesn't grab things from other people. It's a funny thing. Like, it's completely non-personalized. And obviously, it's a function of the system at that level, right?
Yeah.
You can imagine there is a baseline intuitive human sense of, like, if someone is playing with something and you grab it from them, like, you know what you're doing is maybe wrong, even if you're fairly young, though obviously kids will do that. But you can tell, like, oh, well, that's theirs and this is really, but
yeah.
You know, you're in a store, there's just shit everywhere, all over the shelves. Everyone's just going around grabbing things. To understand it as stealing, you have to be able to understand the idea of, like, paying for something. But even that's really abstract, especially in the world where you just have these cards that you swipe. Like, it's not, I assume on some level, it's kind of like, what's the difference?
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is all kind of, and I mean, it is like, well, you know, you have to do all this because that's the way our system works, and that's how we keep track of how much consumption each person is allowed to engage in and stuff like that. But like, that's so abstracted from the ordinary notion of stealing that I do think it's a little bit harder than just kind of the normal difficulty that comes with getting a kid to, you know, act morally or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And even the thing you're stealing from is, like, who are we stealing from? Nobody in this store.
Right.
We're, you know, there's an entity called Stop and Shop.
Okay.
Or Giant or whatever. And they own tons of stores. And, I mean, who are we? We're not stealing from, are we even stealing from anyone who works at the store? Who are we stealing from exactly? The shareholders, because the profit is somewhat lower, or, well, I don't know, because they bake the expectation of stealing into their bottom line, right? And so they'll bake that into prices, right? Like, if they expect 1% of the stuff to be stolen, presumably they'll just increase the price by 1%, and then it kind of pays for itself. So in a sense, because you're driving up the amount of shrink that they experience, you're causing them in some very, like, indirect way to increase price, and so all of us are paying higher prices because of the stealing. So that's who you're stealing from. You're stealing from these other shoppers, I guess. You know, like, it is actually quite, it's so removed from, like, don't grab shit from other people. Like, directly harm this person, right? Like, like punching someone or murdering someone or all the, you know, those kinds of things. It's very diffuse. The harm that you're creating in that environment is very diffuse. Now, you can say, hey, it's against the law, and they'll throw the book at you. Like, but that's like a personal incentive to not do it, right? It's like, you don't want to be, punished. But if you're trying to do a sort of moral persuasion, it's like, well, don't do that because fractionally other customers will have to reduce their consumption because the entity will increase the price to cover the stolen good.
Yeah.
So that's no good, I guess.
Probably not the most convincing.
Yeah, it's an interesting problem, I guess, at this level of, you know, just kind of corporate structure in general is very much not on the human scale, if you will. So
it's true. It's true.
Jane has some other hot sports opinions these days. She's commonly sharing hot sports opinions.
She's it's at the point where talking to her is like talking to a little adult.
She
can fully clock what you're saying.
She's got some, no, she can. And I'm sure it'll seem like, oh, well, of course, because you're influencing her, but maybe not. Maybe this is just, maybe you can also just dismiss it as the naivete of a child or something, but she's very frequently disturbed by the idea that you have to pay for things.
Yeah, she's bothered by that.
Yeah. And she knows, of course, that some people don't have enough money to pay for things. But she even goes beyond that. And is concerned about who has to pay for it and whether it would actually make more sense for them to instead keep the money so that they could spend it on something else. And I've explained to her that, well, then that means the money would have to come from somewhere else.
Right.
Even once she could kind of get her head around that, she still frequently is like, well, yeah, but that's a better source for the money than, you know, the fee, right? So, like, for example, it got warm enough this week that we went to the beach for the first time this year. And it's at a certain month, you have to buy a beach pass to go to the beach, which is very weird. Never experienced that growing up. We had, like, lakes and beaches on lakes and stuff, and I don't ever remember having to pay for anything to go to the beach. But I think they do it because these coastal towns, you know, they only have so many beaches. They're like municipal beaches, and they're worried about people from other municipalities just overwhelming the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if you've only got a handful of towns that are right on the coast, and they maintain these municipal beaches, but then you've got a huge population that's off the coast that's in these other municipalities, they might all come down and whatever, right? So it's a way to manage it. I guess I get that. But I was telling her, oh, man, I need to make sure I get this pass, you know, before the month comes. And she's like, what? You have to pay to go to the beach?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of weird. And then I explained to her that I was reading a nearby town actually made it to where you didn't have to pay to go to the beach because they would just check your license plate. And if, you know, that's how they would enforce things. And so long as the license on your car had an address that was registered in the municipality, you were good to go. And I was like, so you don't actually technically have to, you know, pay for the beach, but I don't know. They're not doing that system here, and she got real upset about that. And what her main grievance was, look, most people going to go to the beach is going to be with kids. That was her claim.
Fair.
And I mean, there are a lot of kids at the beach. And two, those parents need that money to spend on the kids. Those were her two-pronged argument there. She was like, as a distributive matter, we don't want this money coming out of the parents' pockets because the parents it would be better for them to have the money so that they could spend on the kids, which is, of course, her.
True.
So she's like, this is limiting my ability to consume, that you got to pay this bullshit fee. When instead, you know, maybe the fee could be borne more broadly through a small uptick in the property tax or something. I'm like, yeah, you know, you make a good point.
She's making some sense.
I mean, I think, you know, it's a little hard to disentangle because normally you don't get to have a child express these thoughts.
Yeah.
But you know, it's hard to disentangle it, you know.
I guess now it's not hard to disentangle. Now that we have our own woke toddler.
I guess it's not hard to disentangle. It's just that she's like just self-interested. It's just weird because normally when people would argue this, it's hard to be super self-interested in it.
Yeah,
you know, because it's not a child, so you're just kind of arguing about the importance of socializing the costs of kids in order to remove burdens on certain groups that have higher expenses because they have dependents and all, you know, the whole kind of welfare state spiel. But she is the dependent, so in her mind, she's like, what? This is taking money out of my pocket.
it's especially great coming from an actual child.
Yeah. Because the damn society is charging me money to use the beach. I don't have money. It's bullshit.
I mean, she raises a point.
She does. I mean, that's another point, you know, because she's also, you know, and I try to express this sometimes to people and they're always a little skeptical because they're like, well, it's parents. But it's kids. Like, the kids are the ones consuming it. So it is weird. And the beach is a little bit complicated because there's multiple. But there's a little strangeness to saying that kids need to pay money, you know, like they don't have money.
Yeah. Now, personally, of course, wouldn't be my approach.
You can create a system where you give parents like the child allowance and then you charge and then it all kind of evens out, right? Because if the child allowance is able to pay for the beach pass, then you're good to go, you know? So that would be fine as well. But if you're not going to do that, then it might make sense to start knocking the fees off of certain things, you know? And socializing those, you know, movie tickets for kids are free and museums are free and whatever. They already kind of do that up to a certain age. I know the subway is free for the kids, and the commuter rail's $1 so for the kids. So
much to consider.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Much to consider. And we'll be back soon with more to consider.
Alrighty. Let me find our man here.
Adios, mofo.
It's always too low nowadays.
Adios, mofo.
Bye-bye.